You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. Thanks for joining us on this Monday edition of Trumpet Radio Live. You can listen at the live link at thetrumpet.com as well, or online there at kpcg.fm. I'm Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon stopping by. Hillary Clinton, she could be president of the United States, but she has some email problems that have been following her around. And this is a write-up you have. It's from The Guardian. The title is WikiLeaks to Publish More Hillary Clinton Emails. What do they have to say about this?
Well, the founder of WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, who has actually, by the way, been hiding out in the Ecuadorian embassy in London for almost 4 years now.
Yeah.
Somehow no one's able to get to him.
Yeah.
But he's threatening to release more Hillary Clinton emails.
When I saw this, article, and I saw his name attached to it, I did have that thought. I'm like, hey, wait a minute. Hasn't that guy been hiding for a long time? And he has. It's 4 years now.
They know exactly where he is, I guess.
But they can't do anything about it.
Maybe that would just break all international law. I'm not
Could
really
be.
Sure.
He's high profile, so yeah. People would definitely know. So he's got he always gets his hands on stuff,
mm-hmm.
and he's got more of these emails, and he's just throwing them out there.
Right. He already released a searchable archive of all of her emails in March, and now he's threatening to unleash thousands more. It's interesting. That archive had 30,322 emails, but that doesn't include all the emails that Hillary Clinton actually wiped from the server before she released it to the authorities. So I saw a lot of late night shows that were just making fun of the whole situation, saying like, oh, all that's in her emails are just how she doesn't know how to use technology very well, or asking someone to do an errand for her. And they conveniently leave out the fact that she probably got rid of the more incriminating ones before anyone even saw those emails.
Right. What's his angle here, the Julian Assange? What's he hoping to do other than just cause some trouble?
He just really doesn't like Hillary Clinton. That's one thing. He's always been a critic of her, and he is convinced that the Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, will not indict Clinton, but he at least knows that it will provide ammunition for someone like Donald Trump in the upcoming election and maybe hurt Hillary's chances of winning.
So he's very politically motivated.
It seems like it, yeah. At least in this case, although he's released a lot of other things that maybe we're unsure of his motivations for.
Yeah, that's interesting. You just wonder at this point, like, what would it take for there to be any real trouble?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's been so much released already. There's so many scandals, Benghazi and other things, and yet nothing's really stuck.
Right.
What would it take for there to be an actual, like, okay, we're going to do something about this?
Right. And there is even that story recently about how Google has been altering its search terms to favor Hillary Clinton. If you type in Hillary Clinton crime, it goes to her crime bill in 1994 instead of like how she has committed crimes.
Right.
So search engines like Yahoo and Bing have completely different results, showing that they haven't been manipulated at all.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talk even about who's pulling the levers on some of these things as far as the internet goes. And, you know, I know I've even seen an interview with Matt Drudge from the Drudge Report where he feels very sure that he'll be done pretty soon, mm-hmm. like he'll be shut down and that type of thing. Now, I don't know if that, you know, that's his opinion.
Is he conservative?
Yeah, I think so. I think he kind of leans more that way. I don't totally know all of his thinking, but yeah, he's even said that he's been told that there's laws on, you know, that they're trying to cook up to eliminate the ability to like link to things, copyright infringement type
crazy.
Of laws. So who knows if that would happen or not? But it is interesting when you see stories come out where things are being manipulated, because the internet, you know, we all have this idea that the internet's sort of a free for all and you can just find anything you want, but again, there are massive companies that kind of do control the flow of information.
Yeah, it was pretty hilarious. I watched the video showing how Google was clearly altering the results. If you type in Hillary Clinton and then the two letters IN, instead of indictment, it says India and Indiana. Really? Is that what people are most likely to search for?
That's
when
what they're
they
looking
type
for.
That in?
Tell me about her days in Indiana. Yeah, very interesting. He's already, Julian Assange, he's already released, how many was it?
It was over 50,000.
50,000.
Yeah, it's crazy how many he's already released.
Did did he say like how many more he has exactly, or is that just kind of a infinite number?
Let's see. I think he didn't specify when it would happen or how many. He was just interviewed yesterday, and that's when he sort of made this threat, and it's really likely he's going to follow through on it. But you look at the internet and how someone like Google might be helping Hillary Clinton. At the same time, the internet also has WikiLeaks.
Yeah.
So there are definitely big parties on either side, either trying to help her or hurt her, it seems.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I would imagine that if he's got something that's especially damaging, he'd hold on to it until later, you know, and try to use it for whatever his reasoning would be, whether he's trying to get some sort of favor or whether he's, whatever he's up to there. They always say knowledge is power, right?
So right.
You've got information.
You said, it remains to be seen what actually has to be done before she gets in any real trouble for this. There was that 78-page investigation by the Inspector General of the State Department not too long ago, and that talked about breaches that we didn't even know about yet. Obviously, she had wiped her server before turning it over for the people to know about her emails, but she also was using mobile devices in the State Department without checking to see if there would be a possible security breach. There are a lot of violations going on, and conveniently, there was no Inspector General at the time to oversee her actions.
The only way to stay secure is to have nothing of value to say in your emails.
Yeah,
That's how I stay secure.
And say all the important stuff face-to-face.
It's no value in what...
At a whisper, so that hopefully no bugs pick you up either.
Yeah, well, that's what they're doing. There was a story on that. I think it was on the Trumpet Hour a while back about how, in the EU, they're doing that. They're going into some of their meetings, and they're just using a notepad and paper.
That's crazy.
Going back to the old ways of doing it because of the chance that, somebody else is going to get your information.
Yeah. Espionage is extremely advanced. A lot of countries have some high-tech ways of extracting information from you without you even knowing it.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what's released. I'm sure there'll be a lot more that comes out. Whether it does anything or not, who knows? But this write-up here is from The Guardian. WikiLeaks to publish more Hillary Clinton emails.
Yeah. As if we need more division in this country.
Yes, right.
Let's cause some more hatred by releasing more emails, I guess. It's necessary, but it's definitely not going to be a peaceful solution.
There'll be different opinions on that. They should put them all in a book, like a coffee table book. Just for
it'd be a huge book. It's over 50,000 pages as it is without the new additions.
Yeah,
so
just sit back in a conversation piece. Yeah, pretty serious business. It's pretty interesting. The write-ups at The Guardian there on WikiLeaks to publish more Hillary Clinton emails. You can read the rest of that there if you'd like to do that. Grant, thanks for stopping by and bringing that to us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. We'll take a quick break, come back, and take a look at a few things that have happened on this day in history.
Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG is produced by the Philadelphia Church of God. The Philadelphia Church of God also publishes the Philadelphia Trumpet. The Trumpet is a free monthly news magazine that analyzes world events. It offers a distinct perspective that compares current news to Bible prophecy. The Trumpet matches prophecy to the United States, Britain, and other nations. The Trumpet is published in Edmond, Oklahoma, alongside KPCG. More information is available at thetrumpet.com.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here, 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. And if you'd like to listen to us, you can do it at any of those locations, the TuneIn app as well. You can follow us on Twitter at KPCGFM. We'll send out some programming tweets and some links to programs too. And you can email us as well, comments@kpcg.fm. We appreciate those coming in, and especially the ones that make us feel good about ourselves.
Yes.
But we'll take anything.
Yeah, we always need a little bit of that in our lives. So
little bit of a pat on the back. Make you feel a little bit better about yourself. That is true. Today is June the 13th, and here are some of the things that have happened on this day in history. 1825, on this day, Walter Hunt patented the safety pin, and Hunt then sold the rights for $400. He probably thought at the time, like, I'm making a lot of money, this is great, but then safety pins are used, so I imagine it's worth a lot more than that.
Yeah, well, I'm a little surprised it took them so long to come up with it, I guess, because it seems like a pretty simple thing, but and my experience, you're not really safe either. Maybe there's an operating manual I didn't read before using them, but
they're safe until you bring the pin out.
Right.
Then they are unsafe.
Yes.
Very unsafe at that time. It's interesting too when people sell things, like even in the headlines today, they're talking about Microsoft. They're buying LinkedIn for $26.2 billion, and it's a lot of money, but sometimes those things work out. And sometimes they don't in terms of adding value to the company. But there are times where people jump ship way too early and sell something, and then it just ends up being this massive thing, and they lost their, their chance at it. I was watching actually a show with a kind of a somewhat well-known comedian. He went to school with Zuckerberg from Facebook, and people are always like, why didn't you get in on that? And he's like, every Ivy League school had their version of it. For their school, it didn't seem like it was a big deal.
Right.
And Facebook just happened to really take off. So you got to be in the right place at the right time. And also have enough foresight to know, it'd be worth me investing in this. So the safety pin, that was an investment back then in the day. $400, that's a little more reasonable, I guess. Not like the billions they're selling things for today. 1866 on this day, the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was passed by the U.S. Congress. It was ratified on July 9th. 1868, the amendment was designed to grant citizenship to and protect the civil liberties of recently freed slaves. It did this by prohibiting states from denying or abridging the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, depriving any person of his life, liberty, or property without due process of law, or denying to any person within their jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. So that was a good thing. That's something that should be highlighted a little bit more. It seems like too often people highlight where they feel something's been unfair, they've been treated unfairly. It's good to highlight the positives here, too. This is a pretty positive thing.
Yeah, I think especially all the apologists about some mistakes made in the past, they do forget that these amendments, 13th, 14th, and 15th, I believe, were all made for to prevent those mistakes from happening again. I mean, they're made specifically to help African Americans be free and be equal, and it did take time for that to reach its full potential and its full implementation. But they were great laws, and they do embody exactly what we went through on Friday, Declaration of Independence. All men are created equal. Just an amazing result from the Civil War as well, that after over 800,000 Americans died, and a lot of slaves fought in that war too, or were victims of that, that we did create laws to prevent these things from ever happening again. And it is a law that has really done a lot of good in this country, has opened the doors for a lot of people, and has really set America apart from the rest of the world, where a lot of people don't have these same freedoms, or people aren't willing to change the laws once they've been enacted for over 100 years.
Yeah, 1866, the 14th Amendment was passed. 1888, the U.S. Congress created the Department of Labor. So there's a lot of people unemployed today. But yeah,
at first I thought that was about childbirth, but I got it now.
That's clever. Yes. 1898 on this day, this one will hit home for you, Abraham. The Canadian Yukon Territory was organized. You ever been up into the Yukon?
I haven't, actually. I haven't been.
That's way up there.
It is, yeah. Yes, very far north. I've never been up to the three territories. I've been to all the provinces except for Newfoundland, because that's an island off in the north as well. But the gold rush brought everyone up north there and to the west coast. So it's a lot of desolate tundra, but there is a lot of neat history up there too.
That's where you go if you want to start a reality show.
Right.
They have all those reality shows that are up in the colder regions, like Ice Road Truckers.
Right, yeah.
You got to be careful if you're an ice road trucker, because that ice can, it's like a trap door.
Right.
You can fall right in there.
Yeah, I've watched a few episodes of that back when I had TV, and it is... I think for the first few, you watch it with a sense of anxiety the whole time, because you almost expect them to plunge through the ice at any given moment. A reality TV show on the Gold Rush would be interesting.
Well, they have that, what do they call it? there is a show about the gold. They're gold mining, and it's all their stuff. Their adventures they get into, and of course, I think a lot of that stuff is set up because there's never a normal day,
right?
You know, there's never an episode where like, normal day,
right?
It's always near death, or you know, something's happening. So.
Yeah.
Those are interesting shows. I think there's a lot of setting up going on with some of those plots. 1920 on this day. This one, we were looking at this earlier, Abraham, and this really surprised us that this is even a thing. The U.S. Post Office Department in 1920 ruled that children may not be sent by parcel post. Well, how did this come up? Was somebody sending children? Did somebody bring a child and say, I'd like to ship this to the Yukon Territory?
Yeah, someone must have tried. So...
They said, you know what? We need a law against shipping children in the mail.
Yeah. Well, I just think the postman just got tired of handling packages that were struggling against them.
Delivering the babies.
But
did somebody try to do this? That's the thing. I need to dig a little deeper into the no children through the parcel post.
Yeah, I think they probably did, or someone came in with a kid and asked them, how many stamps do I need?
Could be. Well, you know, it's interesting because... When we were talking about this earlier, I did admit to you that I have thought about how much more it costs to fly in an airline than to like ship a package.
Right.
And I've thought like, well, if I could put myself in a box, you know, it could get there for like $50.
That's true.
It'd be a rougher ride.
Yeah.
And no snacks, but you don't get snacks now anyway.
Yeah, or just buy a family-sized pack of chips and you're good to go for
A while. Bring them in there with you.
Yeah.
Anyway, sometimes these things pop up, that rules that they had to make, and you just think, wow, I didn't know that was a rule you'd have to make. 1920, they decided you couldn't ship children in the parcel post. They didn't say anything about first-class mail. Maybe that was okay.
That's true, yeah.
Just not by parcel post.
I think this did disappoint parents all across America, though. Thankfully, we've forgotten about it.
Yeah, it's an interesting law there. 1922, this one is also bizarre. Charlie Osborne started the longest attack of hiccups on record. He hiccuped over 435 million times before stopping. He died 11 months after the hiccups ended in 1991. We were trying to figure out how they knew he hiccuped 435 million times. I guess you'd have to just count how many he did per minute and then do the math or something.
Yeah, because I couldn't imagine someone writing a little tick mark on a blackboard.
That's a lot of hiccups.
Yeah,
nobody likes the hiccups. They're irritating. They usually don't last more than a few minutes.
Yeah, it is one more irritating functions of the body when it does happen. And I think they should make a movie about it though, because a comedy or something. I mean, it's sad that he died afterwards, but I imagine you do some damage to yourself when, because I mean, that's, we don't think about, but there's a lot of force, your body and your...
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking he probably got tired of everybody giving him like the remedies, you know, like, hey, you just have to scare yourself or do this or do that. There's all those ideas about how to stop that.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, the guy couldn't stop. So anyway, yeah, wow. Look, think about the dates on that. 1922 to 1991 is when he died, and it was 11 months in between then when he stopped. He'd been hiccuping for like almost 70 years.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
It's just a whole lifetime thing, I guess. Yeah,
yeah, that would be hard to get a job. It'd be hard to have friends. People are like, "What's with the?
Yeah,
can you stop doing that?" And you're like, "No, actually, I can't." 1943 on this day, German spies landed on Long Island, New York. They were soon captured, so they were not very successful. There they came too late. If they had come earlier, they would have been fine because everybody was coming from Germany into the U.S. 1966 on this day, this is a famous thing, the landmark Miranda versus Arizona decision was issued by the U.S. Supreme Court. The decision ruled that criminal suspects had to be informed of their constitutional rights before being questioned by police. So we're all familiar with that, probably from like television shows, like whether fictitious or, you know, like Cops or those things,
right,
where they're always, every fictional police show has that, you know, you've got to read me my rights, you know, yeah. Oh, my lawyer, that type of thing. So yeah. Anyway, it's because of this, 1966.
Yeah, actually, I think Scalia, actually, this was one of his first ones he deliberated in, actually.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, 1971 on this day, the New York Times began publishing the Pentagon Papers. The articles were a secret study of America's involvement in Vietnam. That was back in 1971. 1978, on this day, Israelis withdrew the last of their invading forces from Lebanon. So just about every couple of days, something with Israel in the Middle East, there is historical import, and they've just had troubles that have been ongoing. And that was in 78, which is the year I was born, by the way.
Okay. Well, it's good to know.
Yeah. So anyway.
Yeah, he's younger than you think, everyone.
Yeah. So there you go. Do the math. 1979, on this day, Sioux Indians were awarded $105 million in compensation for the U.S. seizure in 1877 of their Black Hills in South Dakota. I've been to the Black Hills. It's a pretty nice area. So have you ever been there? You said you were in the Dakotas.
Yes. Yeah, I've traveled through the Dakotas several times, but I've never made it to that area. I've passed close by, but I have always wanted to see Mount Rushmore.
Mm-hmm.
In that region too. That would be awesome to see.
It is neat. Yeah, I have seen that, and it is neat to see. 1992, on this day, future U.S. President Bill Clinton criticized rap singer by the name of Sister Souljah for making remarks filled with hatred toward whites. I don't remember that, and I don't remember that person. In case you're wondering, the name is spelled S-O-U-L-J-A-H. Souljah, but Souljah.
Yeah.
It's a play on words. So anyway, we all know the president, but I don't remember her. But she made some bad remarks, I guess, in 1992. 2000, we're going to talk about this one a little bit more. In North Korea, the leader, Kim Jong, welcomed South Korea's president for a three-day summit. It was the first such meeting between the leaders of North and South Korea. And I thought it'd be interesting to look at a little bit of the history between North and South Korea. Obviously, they've had a pretty tension-filled standoff for quite a few years. And so what's some of the history involving these two nations?
Yeah, this is a really interesting subject to study. And there have been several high and low spots throughout their history. But I think it is the lesson from it. The interesting lessons are that it's a result of bigger conflicts, of bigger forces in play that it did cause these two nations that come into being, and it had unintended consequences that they're still dealing with. So I think there's just a lot of lessons here for world power, and especially the United States and other big nations, on when you decide certain things or when you implement certain policies, it can affect nations for generations and create situations that are impossible to fix. And while Korea is not impossible, it's pretty close. It would take an amazing, I think, miracle of change of heart in both sides to finally find some unity there. But basically, there's some quick background on how they became two nations. For a long time, for centuries, they were one nation. They were deeply linked to China during the Imperial Chinese Dynasty, which was 1500s through the 1800s, around in there. And then Japan started to rise to power at the end of the 19th century. They fought some wars with Russia and China. And that upset Korea because they're right in the middle. Japan, Russia, and China are the three big powers in Asia. Korea is a little peninsula right in the middle of all three. So they do have a very difficult geographic position. After some deliberations with the United States, Howard Taft and some others, U.S. got the Philippines. They got dominance over that region. Japan got Korea. And then China was left alone because they were waning in power at the time. So then World War One through World War II, Korea was under control of Japan. And it was so until they surrendered in 1945. And then the Soviet Union and U.S. split it into two zones of occupation, kind of like they did in Germany after World War II. So both sides had the zones. And then after that, it turned into the Cold War, because then the communist side wanted the government, so did the American side. And so since then, the Korean War, obviously, it ended in armistice. A lot of tensions through there. And it was pretty cold all the way up until the 1970s. That's where we had this first warming of relations in 1972. And this coincided with the American reapproachment with China, with Henry Kissinger leading the way there. And they did have some agreements. They did look for creating one country. easing military tensions, really trying to find some unity there, but then some disputes, people getting kidnapped, clashes on the ill-defined maritime borders in the West Sea there caused some problems, so they backed off from each other. But the main cause of friction has been the nuclear policy coming into place, because it does pose a big threat to South Korea. They do want the disarmament of the whole peninsula, and also both sides don't want to concede defeat on the former. If Korea was going to unite, what form of government would it be? A communist or a democracy?
Right.
And so both sides don't want to concede to either side of them. So that's been the big problem. But there have been several high spots. 1970s, like I mentioned, and then the early 90s, they had sunshine. Diplomacy leaders came into place, and they really tried to bring families who were divided on each side together, more economic relations, more trade. North Korea does need a lot of aid because their economy is so poorly developed. But then the recent family we have in, the Uns and the Kims, I guess it's the Kims, they had a lot more aggressive nuclear policies, and that's really what pushed the South Korea away to the position where we're in today, where there's minimal cooperation and just threats of war all the time. And that's really how it ended. And I just think it just shows how the diplomacy won't work if you won't compromise. And if nuclear weapons get in the way, if you're arming for war, it's hard to really find that balance.
Yeah. Continued conflict over there. So interesting history with North and South Korea. One quick note here. One of our listeners sent us this email about the babies being delivered. They were interested in that. And on February 19th, 1914, Mae Pierstorf, just short of her sixth birthday, was mailed from her parents' home in Grangeville, Idaho, to her grandparents about 73 miles away for 53 cents worth of stamps. But it wasn't as bad as you think. They would just go with the postman.
Right.
They didn't put them in a box.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah.
But they decided, hey, we can't do this.
So we were onto something.
We were onto something, yeah. They put an end to it. 53 cents, that's not a... That's, you can't travel that far today for 53
yeah,
cents.
Yeah, that's a good deal.
Yeah, yeah, it is. So the Key of David program's coming up along with the Trumpet Daily Radio Show in just a bit here on KPCG. That'll do it for us on Trumpet Radio Live today. Myself, Dwight Falk, Abraham Blondeau, thanks for joining us on this Monday. Have a great rest of your Monday, and we'll see you back here tomorrow.